Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on best practices in collecting, scrubbing, and integrating skip trace data. We've got a great panel of speakers here to share their insights and perspectives with you, and I want to get to them as quickly as we can because we're running a couple minutes late. So let me go through my introductory remarks as quickly as possible. This webinar is being generously sponsored by LexisNexis Risk Solutions. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. Let me take a quick second to say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. Let me give you a little bit of biographical information about each of today's speakers. LaDonna Bowling started at Contract Callers in 1996 as manager of the utility collections portfolio. She then became a trainer for the agency. Her mission in the agency, was to change the mindset of the collection staff to treat consumers with dignity and respect, showing them that you can be successful as a collector using consumer-friendly methods. She currently serves as the company's director of call center operations. She is very active with the Georgia Collectors Association and has served on the board of directors since 2010. Ethan Drain is a work team leader at American Profit Recovery in Farmington Hills, Michigan. He's been with the company for 5 years and is passionate about collecting in a compassionate way. He says his favorite part of collections is how individualized it is and how your results depend completely on how much work you put in. Stephen Fernstall is the president of Stoneleigh Recovery Associates, a debt recovery solutions company. Stephen is responsible for the strategic initiatives, operations, and executive management at the firm. He has been actively involved in the credit collection industry for the past 27 years. Stoneleigh Recovery Associates is a mid, first, and third party debt collection agency serving the industry for the past 11 years. Nick Jarman is the owner of Right Away Consulting and Coaching. Jarman recently served a 3-year term on the board of directors for ACA International and is past president of the Missouri Collectors Association. Nick has also been recognized by ACA International with the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. I encourage everybody to encourage everyone to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. This is an audio-only event, so if you're not seeing anything on your screens, you're not missing anything. And with that, let's launch into today's discussion. Let's start at a really sort of high level and kind of drill down, and maybe we'll go around the panel and ask how each agency manages its skip tracing, and they can talk about it broadly, or they can talk about it from a specific perspective of people or process or anything that they want to do. LaDonna, maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah, alphabetical order always works. I look at skip tracing as a group effort, a team effort. Usually ops is the driver behind skip tracing. IT has to be involved for moving files in and out, you know, to the vendor, back into the shop, and then compliance reviews and audits the workflows. So it is truly a teamwork effort to have a successful skip tracing process.
Excellent. What about you, Ethan, at American Profit Recovery?
So we share that same mentality of a team effort for skip tracing. Of course, IT is involved with our batch skip tracing on the back end, but a lot of our skip tracing is left up to the individual collectors. Mostly it's done with a per desk type of cost. And each collector is, up to skip tracing their own accounts, getting the information that they think is the best information. Not to say that account can't be revisited by somebody else or a different method of skip tracing, but it's really left up to the individual to decide exactly what the best way to skip trace an account is and what the best information to gather is.
Excellent. Do you provide your collectors with the same sort of autonomy and authority, Stephen?
We do provide desktop solutions for our agents, but we take a different approach, which is a systematic approach to skip tracing, where almost everything is done for us in a batch process. We actually use a company called Tech Services to manage our data waterfall and all the skip tracing data vendors, which they provide us a report on a monthly basis, telling us the ROI, the most contacts, the fastest to contact. So we're always having our data being champion challenged, and they manage it from an API approach where they're pushing and pulling information in and out of our system based on the needs, you know, from a time perspective, or if no additional information is available or too many calls have been placed to a particular number, bad addresses, the entire process is automated for us.
Got it. Nick, at the different agencies you've worked at or, you know, sort of been involved with, you know, maybe talk a little bit about what you've seen and maybe what's worked.
Yeah, I think it's a blended of both, but I think that for the most part, as Steve was saying, it's more on the automation part. And a lot of that is due to the fact that we're dealing with a lot more volume and a lot less contactability. And so the more time that we can have our collectors on the phone generating revenue, the more time that we're going to make money. But there's the fine balance there because, you know, I've seen different beliefs in the fact that some agency owners, executives don't believe that skip tracing makes money and they want to go right to the sources where the money's made. And then I've seen others where that's the secret sauce and that's where the money's at. And so it can be a big differentiator if you have a solid skip tracing plan compared to somebody that doesn't, you're going to pretty much outperform what they're doing.
I agree with you, Nick. It is a blended environment. You know, back in the day when everything was a manual process, it was also a costly process. And as you know, skip tracing is not an exact science, it's an art. And you got to find that right mix. And unfortunately, there are no color by number things for us to follow. So you have to find what works best for your agency. And with the collector skip tracing, I'm all a fan for that, but we have to control that and limit what they can skip. Otherwise, you know, they get bogged down and involved in, you know, trying to find someone.
That's a great point you just made. It's, you know, you can have all the information that you can have all the information at your fingertips, you know, anything related to a consumer, but if you can't get them on the phone or you can't contact them, it almost doesn't matter. So, you know, for what you're doing. So it really is a balance. And sometimes that's a tough line to draw and a tough line to walk, especially if, you know, it's a high balance, high scoring account, but it's definitely one of the challenges of skip tracing at the collector level.
Is there a sweet spot in terms of the number of vendors that an agency should be working with when it comes to its skip tracing? Or is it something, you know, is it more like along the lines of what I've heard so far in terms of it really is going to vary agency by agency? Nick, what do you think about that?
You know, I think that in my experience, normally about 4 to 5 different vendors. And the reason I say that is because each of the different vendors, you know, some of them will say that they're getting the information from the same data sources. But the reality is that they're not. The data sources that they're getting them from are from different spectrums. And as long as you have a deduplication process, you could use as many skip tracing companies as you want, as long as you're making sure that the information that you're being provided back is being deduplicated so that you make sure that you're not getting the same information back that you already have. So I would say that what I've seen the success rate is about 4 to 5 different data, and then making sure that there's that deduplication so that you're not getting back the same information.
And some skip vendors, they have specialties where they have a product that's better than some other vendors, and you have to find what's going to work for you, because we go through a scrub vendor the vendor that, you know, takes our portfolio when we first get the accounts in and scrubs them for litigious debtors, bankruptcies, deceased. We have a flooring vendor, and then we have a vendor for actual skip tracing, which gives us the phone numbers and the good addresses. And we also use a vendor for what we call triggers that we use on some of our later stage, older debt.
So, what's the process to sort of figure out what goes where?
Well, scrub comes first, and I think the panel would agree, you know, you want to scrub first and pull out the accounts that legally you should not be pursuing, or the accounts that are going to put some risk on you with litigious consumers out there. So I think we all agree that we scrub first, and then it depends on what you want to do to the portfolio. Sometimes the type of debt, the balance, the age of the account dictates what type of waterfall process you're going to put on there. But you also want to consider that a good skip tracing waterfall can also help you manage your workflow and your labor costs.
Got it. Okay. At this point, I'd like to pause the discussion and invite and introduce Linda Straub-Jones from LexisNexis Risk Solutions to say a few words. Linda?
Hi, Mike. Thank you. And thanks again to all our great panelists for participating today. I'm excited to hear the rest of your comments. As many of you know, LexisNexis Risk Solutions supports the credit and collections industry through its comprehensive database of information on of individuals and businesses. The information we compile comes from over 10,000 sources and enables us to provide access to over 280 million consumers and 48 million businesses. Our solutions can be accessed through our online portal, many of you know as Action for Collections, or through batch processes and scrubs, or through various APIs, and we're also integrated in most of the collection industry's account management software systems for easier access to our products. Recently, we've been helping companies determine in a skip trace capacity if accounts they're looking for really are a human being or if it's a synthetic identity. That's one thing we've been running into a lot, and helping customers determine if synthetic fraud is playing a part in why they can't find somebody in a skip trace process. So whatever your data needs, phones, bankruptcy, compliance, scrubs, et cetera, we hope you'll consider LexisNexis data provider. Please visit us at risk.lexisnexis.com. And thanks again, Mike.
Thanks, Linda. And thanks again to LexisNexis Risk Solutions for sponsoring this webinar and for the company's commitment to helping educate the ARM industry. We had a question that came in a couple of minutes ago, and it's actually the next question that I have in my queue. So this is just further proof that great minds think alike. But what I want to ask the panel is, does the type of debt or the balance owed affect the level of skip tracing that is conducted? And I'm curious what each of you has to think. Ethan, can you start first this time?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a great question. I mean, it certainly does matter, is the answer. And, you know, it can mean a different thing to each agency about what, you know, what kind of work is done based on the balance of the account, the scoring of the account, the type of client it is, or the type of paper that it is. You know, we're definitely going to dedicate more time to skip tracing if the balance on the account is higher, its score is higher, and if it's a good client or good paper. You know, we might spend a lot less time on one that's on the opposite end of that spectrum, or even leave it to be automatically skip traced through a batch process. So it absolutely does matter, and that's what, you know, that's what we teach our collectors to pay attention to as well when they're going through their skip tracing process.
Can you give me an example, maybe, of you know, sort of what that range would be, where some, you know, where you know, it's a higher balance, what would constitute a higher balance, or sort of how that, you know, how that decision gets made?
Sure, absolutely. So it's going to mean a different thing to each agency, obviously, based on the kind of accounts that you're working with. But I would consider something that's a high balance is anything over $500. Or a really I mean, there's going to be different levels, but if you're talking about a really high balance, you're talking about your tens of thousands of dollar debts. But anything that's over $500, over $1,000, $1,500 is something that you want to pay attention to. And the scoring of the account, which is another thing that we scrub for, the scoring of the account is going to factor into that as well. If you're talking something like a $100 debt, that's something you might not skip trace at all, or spend very little time skip tracing on.
Yeah, the balance comes into play, and it depends on what type of debt you work. Like credit card balances are typically higher than, say, utility or telecom. You know, medical debt can be much lower, you know, taking out your hospitals. But, you know, take a radiology business, for instance. You're looking at an average balance of $85. Then you have to look at costs surrounding finding a skipper. You just might want to run those through, you know, one process of looking for a phone number.
Does the balance ranges that we're talking about so far, does that sort of align with what your setup is at your agency, Stephen?
Well, we have five different treatment paths. They are segmented by age of debt, type of debt, balance ranges, and so what we do is we create a custom path for each product that's delivered. And we typically segment our business out for balance ranges. So we go anything above $5,000. We'll also receive manual skip work beyond our batch services that we have with Waterfall. We find that the volume to keep up with the client requirements for most of our SLAs, the volume of calls that we have to place out, doesn't allow a lot of time for manual skip tracing. So we kind of key in on the higher value accounts that we'll put additional emphasis into.
Are there limits, or do you ask your collectors not to spend more than a certain amount of time collecting, you know, or skip tracing on an account, depending on the balance?
So if we looked at it from an ROI perspective, we typically want them to spend less than 5 minutes on an account. Now, if the balance ranges, get above $50,000, we'll allow additional time for the collectors to do manual skip work on the accounts.
Got it. Okay. Looking at this from the client's perspective, do the clients have input into the skip tracing process, either the amount of time or any of the parameters that we've talked about so far? Nick?
Yeah, I think it depends on the type of client that you're working with, but especially on the financial services side, they'll have some input, not necessarily who you're using, but they're going to want to see that their accounts are being skip traced, and whether that be through a batch or a manual process. So the short answer to that is yes, they will have input into the skip tracing process to make sure that it's being done, especially on the accounts where they're not providing any information. And I did want to circle back just to your previous question about does mm-hmm. the type of debtor balance owed affect the level of skip tracing? I think it's important to note now with Lexus and a lot of these other vendors is they actually will go through and make it look like an individual is skip tracing the account. And they'll go through that systematic process where a collector would go step 1, 2, 3, and 4, so that you can limit the number of manual skip tracing agents. You can set up during onboarding, I want you to look for A, B, C, and D, and replicate what an agent would be doing so that you can save time on the back end.
That's interesting. Let me circle back to something you said at the beginning of your comments about, you know, sort of the clients are going to want you to see you skip tracing. Is that just a simple report that should be spit out, or are there other ways that you can show a client that you're doing, you know, that you're doing skip work on their accounts?
Well, dependent upon the sophistication of the client, they're going to get your notes, whether that be daily, weekly, monthly, whether that be they come, they're a little bit less sophisticated and they come in for an audit once a month or once a quarter, they're going to want to be looking at the notes that showed that you skip trace, what you skip trace, what information you got back. And then some of them are going to dive a little bit deeper and look at what skip tracing you actually did and want to see some of the files that came back showing that there was actual proof. Because one of the things that's important is, you know, the evidence of compliance. So they're going to want to see the evidence that you skip traced the account and how everything went about that.
Got it. And compliance is definitely something we're going to be talking about a little later on. But first, let's talk about something else that I think is a very interesting topic among the industry, and that's the use of social media and how social media can be integrated or used when skip tracing accounts. And LaDonna, I'm curious to get your perspective about what you see in terms of how agencies are using social media and whether they should or shouldn't be.
Well, that can get to be a sticky subject from a compliance perspective, especially, you know, how you are using that information that you get off of social media. You know, what are you doing with it once you get it? Because, you know, there have been a few situations. I know we've all heard them about the scary agents that were, you know, tracking people down on things like Facebook and Twitter, mm-hmm. and then representing themselves as friends of the consumer to make contact with the consumer. So I think that comes to a business decision as to whether, you know, you want to use social media. We choose not to use social media just simply because there are so many great vendors out there that gives you the information that you're looking for. I think social media comes into play with if you're a bounty hunter or you're looking for property to repossess, perhaps.
Yeah, so social media is definitely, it is a sticky subject, and one thing, we don't discourage our collectors from using it. We don't promote it either. I think one of the most powerful things about social media, though, is, you know, take for instance, like LinkedIn, you know, the ability to find somebody's employer, potentially where they work. That is, I mean, that's the number one thing that a lot of our collectors find on social media to help with collecting accounts. I mean, it can be used for that, but it definitely a sticky subject, like LaDonna said.
You know, our internet access is locked down for our collectors, so they can't even access social media if they wanted to.
I forget. Correct. Refresh me. Are your collectors doing their own skip tracing as well?
They do some, and there are some websites that they're allowed to go to. But otherwise, they're locked out of other websites.
So Ethan, at your agency, it doesn't sound like, you know, social media access is restricted for collectors. Are there sort of guidelines or rules in place as to what they can and can't be doing, you know, if they're using social media to skip tracing account?
You know, you're really fuzzy in the phone, Mike. I'm sorry, I didn't hear too much of what you just said.
That's okay. I'm just curious. You know, what rules or guidelines do you have in place for your collectors when using social media to skip trace an account?
Well, one of the rules is not to log into the platform. So let's say you are using LinkedIn to skip trace. We don't want our collectors logging into LinkedIn to skip trace that, especially, you know, you can see LinkedIn. I'm not on it too much myself, to be completely honest with you, but from what I've seen and what I've heard, it can leave a record of who's searched for your profile. So we don't want our collectors logging into social media sites in order to skip trace, but you can still find that information through just a simple Google search. You know, you can find somebody's LinkedIn page and a direct link to it.
Yeah, when you don't log in, they call that trolling, don't they?
You said trolling?
Yeah.
Stephen, what access do your collectors have to social media, and how is that integrated into their skip tracing operations or processes?
So there is some vendors that provide information from social sites, but we try and discourage going into someone's profile. If it pops up, you know, in the information that's in the header information for a Google search, we'll use that information, but I don't allow my staff to go into a person's profile to gather information.
Do you go as far as to block the sites, like block access to the sites?
Yes, we block access to the sites.
Got it.
Now, if it's a business account, we have a special team that skips on business accounts, and they have access to various websites. So, you know, it could very well be social media if they're looking on a business account. And they also go to websites like Secretary of State and those types of things. But, you know, the frontline collectors know.
So Nick, I'm going to come to you to sort of to get out. You know, we're sort of not on the fence, but we've got some that block access and some that don't. You know, curious what your perspective is in terms of whether or not to allow collectors to access social media sites in the first place. And if you do, you know, what sort of work should be done on it in terms of skip tracing accounts?
Well, I think that, you know, for the most part, as one person alluded to, not leaving a trail, and then as LaDonna said, you know, trolling. But you definitely don't want to put somebody out there where they can actually see who's visiting it. My recommendation would be to have a select team of individuals that have been with the company for a while, that you trust and that you would know would be able to use the social media platform, because the reality is that there's a lot of good and useful information out there. Somebody mentioned, you know, like a job. You know, when somebody gets a job, one of the first things they do is they go and they post on LinkedIn and Facebook, hey, I got a job working at Accounts Recovery. You know, and then you can go out there and actually find out where that's at. So there is some value there, but it's the risk reward proposition. And so if you've got somebody that's going to go out there and, you know, put their name out there or try to befriend somebody, then that becomes where there's a big problem.
Well, first of all, who wouldn't want to publicize getting a job at Accounts Recovery? I mean, that's just obvious. But second,
absolutely. So, that was what the plug was for.
Going back to sort of what you were talking about. So you're saying maybe it's something that only more experienced employees or people that, you know, that have been with the company longer, and maybe sort of how you have a rapport with or a certain amount of trust with, allowing them to do it, sort of, but more so than, you know, newer employees who may not have a lot of experience doing that yet.
Yeah, I think that it's somebody that you have to trust, and that may be limited to a few people, but you know, they're just like with most of the stuff, there are vendors that are out there that are trying to aggregate social media information. And while it's kind of hard to be there, and while there's a lot of profiles that are blocked, you would be surprised at how many profiles are out there that are just public information and they don't block it. And it's, you know, sitting out there for you, for anybody to see. So I think that has to be kept in mind. But, you know, the reality is that if you're not, you know, doing something, you're going to get left behind, because social media is the wave of the future, and it is the future. And that's where a lot of people are putting their information. And so it's important to have some form of communication that you can get a hold of in order to reach them.
Okay. We've brought up the issue of compliance, and you can't have a conversation about anything sort of in the arm industry today without talking about compliance. So let's talk about skip tracing and how compliance relates and applies to that. LaDonna, just curious, not curious, but would like to get your insights as to sort of what some of the concerns are that agencies should be aware of as they relate to skip tracing.
Well, you know, dialing strategies, you know, because we're basically purchasing phone numbers from vendors, and they're trying to match the phone number they give us to the best of their ability with the information that we give them. So, you know, if I give them the name Mike Gibb and give them a city and state, I might get back 12 phone numbers and it might not be the right Mike Gibb. And I keep calling that phone number and calling that phone number. So, you know, it could result in, you know, some type of risk there with calling phone numbers. And when you're skipping on accounts, you know, the more information you have about the consumer, the better you are. Like if you have a date of birth and or social security number, that ensures that you get more of an accurate hit. So that way you're not calling or lettering or messaging the wrong person. Develop, you know, dialing strategies. You know, I wouldn't pound, for lack of a better term, a skip phone number. I'd be very strategic with, you know, how many times I work that.
So is it sort of like, you know, a one-time call and then sort of see what happens and wait a couple of months and circle back to it, that kind of scenario?
Well, I don't think I'd wait that long, but, you know, I've heard horror stories of agencies calling phone numbers, you know, 5 minutes a day, every day of the week. So, you know, if I got a batch of phone numbers in today, I put a little strategy in it and I might call them today, then might, you know, call them tomorrow night or two nights from now, and just different strategies looking for different results.
Yeah, especially with the junior senior situations is a huge thing that we run into. And, you know, especially, you know, for males. And one way we combat that is having a strong consumer authentication process when we get a consumer on the phone, connecting them with some sort of piece of information provided by our client. Most of the time it's the address, before discussing the debt, before disclaimers are given, anything like that. So it's when you're skip tracing that junior senior, that junior senior threat is definitely the biggest compliance risk that we face, but we combat it with a strong consumer authentication process.
And that's a very good point from a compliance perspective, because there was an article in the Washington Post earlier this year that said 20% of Americans live in multi-generational homes, and that pretty much equates to 64 million people, and that's a record number. So you have millennials, baby boomers, and who's Gen Xers all in the same household, and you could very well have three people with the same name in one household. So it is crucial that you do have a right party identification process that mitigates risk.
Looking at how a agency should evaluate skip tracing providers, I'm sure that most are doing champion challenger tests. Is that something that needs to be done on a regular, or should be done on a regular basis, Stephen? Or is that something that, you know, really only when you sort of become dissatisfied with somebody do you start looking to see if there's, you know, if the grass is greener on a different provider?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. My personal view on it is you have to consistently be monitoring all of the data vendors that you have and looking at it from a right party contact perspective, the cost for the data that's being provided, and the ROI that, you know, your spend versus what you're getting back. Uh-huh. In actual dollars being produced. We do this on a monthly basis, and we, through tech services, they provide a report back to us on how each of our vendors within our different treatment paths are performing for our agency. You know, we're in a competitive business, and making sure, you know, you have information that is good, contact the consumer as quickly as possible I'm sure most of the attendees in here are involved in Champion Challenge within, you know, their client base. So, you know, the speed and the quality of the debt is paramount to, you know, the survival of our business.
How do you do? Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Eleanor. Go ahead.
I was going to say that we audit our results, and you know, it's kind of a simple process. We don't leave voicemail messages, and when we detect a voicemail, you know, the account gets coded as voicemail, no message left. So we'll randomly check the accounts there and see if the voicemail message, you know, if it identifies the consumer, see if it matches the name, and keep records of those. We identify the accounts that come back as return mail when it's an address that we just got from a skip vendor, because you know, if every address that you're paying for, you know, keeps coming back as a as an address from, you know, 5 years ago, then it's just not worth it. Because I have some more stats for you. The average person moves 11.2 times in their life, and that's according to the United States Census Bureau. So, you know, addresses are important and letters are expensive. So if I'm mailing out a letter that's going to cost me 53 cents, I want it to go to the right address. And if that vendor's not giving me a good address and I find it through my own auditing process, then we got to talk. I don't mean to get excited like that, but you know, it is, it's very, y'all know how much money we put into an account before we ever collect anything.
Hey Mike, sure. I got a comment.
Yeah.
I think one of the things too to remember is that when you're setting up the skip tracing vendor is to really let them know what it is that you're looking for, and it really comes back to preference. You have some agencies that prefer quantity, and you have some agencies that prefer quality, and some of the agencies that prefer quantity want every number ever associated with this human being that's possible. And that's going to cause some conflict, and that's going to cause some liability. My personal preference is quality, and the quality of the information that's going to come back is going to be the quality that I believe, or as the vendor believes, that this number is the best number to reach them at. And maybe they provide two numbers because they believe that there's another number that's available. So I think that when you're going and you're vetting your vendors and you're vetting your processes, you really have to look at, you know, do you want quantity, which causes liability, but it makes it a broad spectrum to potentially reach the consumer, or do you want quality, which is going to lower your bill, you're going to get a lower hit rate, or you're going to get a higher quality rate.
So I would add on to that as well. I would have open dialogue with all of the vendors that you work with and share your results with them. A lot of times vendors have different service or product offerings that are generally, you know, not sold as their core business, which, you know, it might fit into your model better than the data that they're providing currently.
And a good vendor is going to be checking in on you to see how you're doing and see how you like their data and see how things are working for you.
Nick, you raised an interesting point, and I was actually getting to ask this question, but sort of in a slightly different way, and it's not sort of quantity versus quality, but quantity or qualities or quality versus price, because this is something Steven was talking about in terms of looking at the ROI. You know, just because something costs more or costs less, there's a perceived value to it one way or the other. So how do you sort of manage the value, the return that you're getting for the amount of money that you're spending? I mean, are you willing to spend more to get a phone number or an address that is a higher degree likelihood that you're going to get the right party, that's the right contact information, versus spending a little less and maybe getting sort of more of a shotgun approach? Or is it, you know, or not, I guess I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, so I think that there's a twofold answer there. And the first is that our time is extremely valuable, and we want to make sure that we're spending it in the best way possible. So if we're going to put numbers on a calling campaign, we're going to want to make sure that we're giving the best opportunity to generate the most amount of contacts, to generate the most amount of revenue. The other side of that is, if you open up a wide box and you start calling all kinds of numbers, you're going to get a lot of frustration from the collectors, because they're going to be taking out wrong numbers after wrong number. And the problem is that, let's say you have five agencies that are quantity over quality, and you have one agency that's quality over quantity. Well, these wrong numbers are going to constantly get bombarded by bad information, and you may be the one that gets the raw end of the stick and starts getting complaints. And that, even though you only called it a couple times, they're getting 10, 15, 20 calls a week, and they're getting bombarded by agencies, and you're going to end up being the one at fault. So that's why I think that the quality, they can actually tell you, you know, here's where the number's coming from, this is where it's going to be at, and, you know, this is how we're getting the number. And then it provides you with that ability to have a safeguard in place to know where it's coming from and to bring that ability.
That's a good point, and well said. And it brings me back to another question, which was something that Donna was mentioning in terms of the communication that an agency will have with its vendors. But Donna, does it go both ways? I mean, do you report back? You know, if you get it, like when you say you get an address that isn't good, or you get a phone number that doesn't match, do you send that data back and sort of check to make sure it's taken off that, you know, that particular?
I do. Like, for instance, we were using a scrub vendor one time, and we had a lot of accounts that were falling through the cracks with bankruptcy. You know, we were getting information on our own discovery that the consumer was bankrupt. And I'm looking back, I'm like, well, okay, here's the bankruptcy day. How did this make it through the scrub? And it was just a communication blunder. And I'll say it was on our part, because we gave a date that the vendor was supposed to use when they were checking for bankruptcies, and the date was a wrong date. So those things got through. So it comes to constantly auditing the data that you're getting back, because, you know, it is expensive. It's an expensive process. And we haven't really talked about scoring with our panel, and because running accounts through waterfalls and getting hits and those types of things are super important. But does everybody on here send everything through? Does everybody go through the pool, or are you using any type of scoring to decide where you're going to, you know, spend your money?
So, I mean, I can answer that. We use Experian's propensity to pay model. And I built internally a machine learning application based on Random Forest, which I find is the best model for the debt collection industry. So each action that occurs on our account base is going to reprioritize and rescore all of our accounts. So we have a cutoff threshold based on the scoring mechanism on how far a treatment path will go, just so we don't spend additional money on accounts that are the least likely to return revenue to us.
Yeah, because I've seen numbers that if you were at the top 30% of your accounts, that's going to yield 80 to 87% of your total payments collected. So, you know, I'd rather have my talent, our staff, working these accounts, you know, to bring in the money. And, you know, like somebody mentioned earlier, we're all on scorecards, you know, vying for that number one spot, because we know if we get to that number one spot, we get more business, we keep the business, et cetera. So I think that it's critical for tying all these things together.
Sorry, just giving anybody else a chance to follow up on that comment. Ethan, do you want to talk about sort of how you score accounts and decide what accounts get skip traced?
Hey, can you repeat that question one more time, Mike?
Yeah, sorry, I guess I'm a little fuzzy today. Just talk about sort of what the process is for determining when an account gets skip traced. Do you skip trace everything or just some of them?
Yeah, it goes hand in hand with what LaDonna was just talking about. And, you know, obviously every single account is potential revenue. So we don't want to, you know, ever give our collectors, you know, tell them, give them a hard line and say, ignore that because of this certain thing. So, but at the same time, I think the best way to decide that is with the scoring. So score everything when it comes in, turned over from our clients, use that decision to figure out what's going to get skip traced, what's going to get manually skip traced by our collectors, and then, you know, leave the rest of it to be batch skip traced, called on different campaigns, but get the good stuff into the hands of the collectors.
Nick, you were talking a little bit before earlier about sort of right party contacts and, you know, bombarding the wrong people with calls. How do you know if an account needs to be skip traced or if the person you're contacting or sending letters to just isn't responding?
So I think there's two things that are at play here. So the first is you let's say you get an account or a group of accounts that come in and there's no information, there's no phone numbers. At that point, I would recommend that it goes through a waterfall process, whatever that may be, 3, 4, 5 processes, deduplication, and try to get the right number. If you've got accounts that come in with phone numbers, I'm a little bit different in the approach on how to handle it. Rather than scoring probability or propensity to pay, what I would want to do is to first score probability or contactability of the phone numbers that we have. And the reason being is that contacts are abysmal. They're at an all-time low. Consumers are wanting different ways of mechanisms to contact them. They want to be contacted at their time and place of convenience. And so what I would do is use a contactability score on accounts that have phone numbers, and of those accounts, then use a probability score to isolate out which accounts are going to get worked. As in LaDonna mentioned, you know, kind of the old 80-20 rule, 70-30. My concern is that if you do that initially and you score it and you say 80% of these accounts are going to pay you, well, if only 20% of those accounts pick up the phone, then you've left yourself with a lot of fruit hanging on the vine. And so if you allow yourself the ability to look at the contactability, and the same way goes for the skip tracing, when you get the skip tracing numbers back, if you use the contactability and then the probability, you have yourself a much better chance of collecting the money and talking to people, because at the end of the day, a score is irrelevant if we can't get the person on the phone.
Agreed. But then, you know, we don't do anything. If we have an account and we've made contact with the consumer, they know who we are, they know why we're calling, and if that number goes bad, we usually don't do anything after that because, you know, we already had their attention. And then with the age of accounts sometimes depicts, you know, what we're going to do on an account, because typically when we get an account this on the tertiary level, it's already been through 2 or 3 agencies at that point. They know they owe the debt, so we're very selective with the processes that we put on that.
Yeah, but they don't know they've messed with LaDonna and the bill's going to get paid.
I'm a kind collector.
That's what I read in the introduction. She's compassionate.
But that doesn't mean she's not persistent.
We've got a couple minutes left
before we run out of time, and I know we've got a bunch of questions that have come in. I want to try and get to as many of them as possible, but if you do have a question, then it would be maybe your last chance to type it in and get it put before the panel before we run out of time in a few minutes. One other thing I wanted to sort of circle back on to give people a second or two to type in any questions that they might have. Going back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of integrations, are most of you using Dash Process with respect to any third-party skip tracing that gets done, or are they more integrated into your collection systems on a real-time basis? Curious to hear how it actually works.
So with this, so you were asking about the third-party skip tracing provider?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So it's the most costly alternative that exists. So if you're working in a volume type environment and you're not pursuing legal channels, most companies won't pursue this type of option. Most of the companies that are using this type of service that I have found are the Department of Ed contract companies and attorneys who are looking to, put some specific remedy on a judgment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cost prohibitive, I would say.
Right. Nick, here's a question for you, going back to what you were just talking about. How can we score probability or contactability on client-provided numbers? What would you suggest?
So there's a couple, and they're not your sponsors, so I apologize for that, but maybe we'll get them to sponsor. But one is Locate Smarter. Locate Smarter does a good job of scoring phone numbers and probability. And then you also have a company called Neustar, I know who you work with, that also looks at probability of contact. And it's really interesting when you're looking at what they're looking at doing, because they can actually tell who the phone number is registered. Is it registered to the same household, same last name? They can even look at when's the last time the phone number's been used. So if you've got a phone number that hasn't been used in 6 months, it's going to go down to a 4 rather than a 1, because there's no way that that person's going to pick up if they haven't answered the phone in 4 months.
Got it. Okay, here was a question that came in earlier. LaDonna, going back to something you were talking about, what is the range of phone attempts you would recommend on a number provided by a skip vendor before discontinuing?
Well, I think you probably need to do some deeper analytics, because we did this a couple of years ago because I was reviewing some accounts and I saw a phone number that we dialed 79 times, and I was horrified. Like, what are we hoping to accomplish here?
It's an 80th call where you get them.
Exactly. So you just you find what works for your shop. So we put our cutoff at 20. And okay. If we're getting the same result from that phone number all the time, then we'll look at, is there another waterfall to send it through? Do we need to look for another phone number? How much longer are we going to retain this account? So, look at what's going on and what motivated the consumer to pay, or what motivated that contact, and that kind of helps you come with a decision in your shop as to where you want to do your cutoff with dialing phone numbers.
That makes sense. Ethan, wanted to ask you, here's a question that came in. If you skip trace an account, how long do you wait before you skip it again if you're still not able to get in touch with somebody?
Well, it kind of depends on what you want to do. So if you can't get a hold of somebody, maybe another good time to reskip it is during a time when traditionally more people pay, and you're talking about the first quarter of the year.
Tax season.
I can't, what are we, 2-3 months out? I know everybody's gearing up for that. And that's the time when you're going to want to reskip, when you're going to want to refresh your information, especially if you're doing, letter campaigns and you have bad addresses, getting new addresses in there, getting reskipped for phone numbers, and, gearing up for when almost sometimes you can throw score out the window a little bit when people can take advantage of that forced savings.
Yeah. And I'm a fan of triggers. these accounts that you've skipped on, and then you park them with one of the vendors that offers collection triggers, and it's a silent monitor on the consumer's credit. And when something happens, like something positive, like a bank card inquiry, mortgage inquiry, you know, or approvals on those, you get that information and you get the consumer's updated information with that, you know, fresh from, you know, whatever CRA that they went to, that their inquiry went to for approval.
Right.
Those work well.
Well, we've reached the top of the hour, but before I let everybody go, what I'd like to do is go around the panel one last time and give them a chance to offer any parting words of wisdom or summary or takeaways or reinforce something from the discussion to kind of help the audience make sure that they walk away with something valuable from today's discussion. So, Steve, maybe you could go first.
Sure. I mean, if anyone has any questions or concerns or wants to know anything additional about, skip vendors and how they're graded, feel free to reach out to me. I am more than happy to help anyone in this industry. It's a challenge for all of us to find the best number and make sure that we're maximizing our ROI with the data spend that we're putting on our expense line. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions.
I appreciate it, Steve. Thanks, Stephen. Thank you. Ethan.
Well, first of all, I can say I really enjoyed the discussion, and I think a lot of good points were made. I heard somebody say it a little bit earlier in the discussion, and, you know, doing something for skip tracing, you know, doing something is better than doing nothing. So there's so many vendors out there. There's not a lot of wrong answers, and it's going to matter, you know, it's going to matter agency to agency what the best process is for your skip tracing. So, you know, perhaps some trial and error too. We've done it, and that's sometimes what it takes to find the best process.
Good tip. Thank you. Nick?
Yeah, I think that skip tracing in today's environment, where we have a lot of people that are moving around, changing phone numbers, that skip tracing is a differentiator. So the more that you invest in skip tracing, probably the less that your competitor is. And so the more that you can do and work with your vendors, work with other people with best practices, the more ROI you're going to get and the more opportunity you're going to get to generate revenue.
Excellent. And LaDonna, since we gave you the first question, you get the last word too to bookend this discussion today.
Well, I can
put a timer on her. Put a timer on her.
I could just bounce off what my esteemed co-panelists have said. And you have to evaluate your portfolio, you know, look at your budget, where do you want to put your spend? There is no cookie cutter solution, and there are a lot of good vendors out there who will customize packages for you based on what your needs are.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Before I let everyone go, let me thank Ethan, LaDonna, Nick, and Steven one last time for their insights and taking the time to share with us today. This webinar would definitely not have been possible without their participation. I also wanted to thank LexisNexis Risk Solutions again for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to risk.lexisnexis.com to learn more about the company. Thanks for participating today. Thanks to everybody who asked questions. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future, as well as a recording of this event, which will be posted in the next couple of days. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.